How long have I been reading for? When did we start? Oh, sorry? Okay, well then, yes, I want to read really two poems to conclude with. Or two things. One, people often ask, you know, how you write poems. This doesn't really describe how you write poems, but I think it's rather amusing. It describes thinking of a poem and trying to write it down during a long, rather long day's journey in a snowstorm. And really what happened was that about a year ago I started I realized my memory was getting rather bad, so I thought I'd better write down everything I did every day. And which now takes practically all day to do. And doing this, some of the things, it seemed quicker to write it down in verse than to, or in some kind of poetry, because it's often quicker than to write it down in prose. But anyhow, this is a rather odd day, really, between Dartmouth and Little Rock. You can imagine such a journey. Well, let's see. First of all, I was supposed to leave Dartmouth. I'll read the prose bits, you'll see, and then you'll see how the poem comes into my head, which I write down while I'm in a bus and on an airport. And you'll see really how it happens and how elements from outside, which have nothing to do with the idea of the poem, enter in. What happened was that the plane didn't go from Dartmouth, so I therefore had to take because of the snowstorm, so I had to take a bus to Boston. That explains how I'm on the bus. Riding on the bus through the snow falling outside and the snow covering the landscape, except for patches of soggy grass, from which it seemed not so much to have melted as to have died away, wearied with a long, long winter, I felt nothing to be less likely than that I should end up that day in Little Rock. It would be after midday when I reached Boston. The two ends of a line connecting New Hampshire with Arkansas seemed to me to have been severed, and on the bus I was as disconnected in my journeyings as a piece of rope thrown down casually on a vast plain. This gave me a sense of liberation, far stronger than my concern about getting to Little Rock, which I regarded as an operation in which I was the patient and had to perform no active role. The result was that mood of ferocious idleness in which the mind races. This lasted all day on the bus, on Boston Airport, and on the flight from Boston to Little Rock. Realizing that unless I wrote them down immediately, ideas would vanish as mysteriously and completely as they arrived, I made notes on the back of the envelope containing my air ticket. Mysterious connections, the first stream of thought seemed to have nothing to do with my present life whatever. They were of a tea party to which my father must have taken me when I was 12 or 13. I have no conscious memory of the occasion. So here's the beginning of the poem. She was, my father said, in an aside, a great beauty 40 years ago. Out of my crude childhood, I stared at our tottering hostess, trembling in her armchair, pouring tea from silver, her pink silk dress, her pale blue gaze. I could not see the girl my father saw. The connection of this untracked memory with my thoughts of today suddenly appeared. Now that I'm older than my father then was, I go with lifelong friends to the same parties, which we have gone to always. We do the same things always, although the parties sometimes change to funerals, that sometimes used to change to christenings. Boston Airport, when the bus emerging from snowy landscapes arrived there, was in bright sunlight. The problem of getting to Little Rock was suddenly solved. I would arrive there by a different flight, but only an hour behind schedule. Meanwhile, I had to sit waiting for an hour, during which the people I saw fed what I think were probably irrelevancies into my train of thought. A face. I wonder, should I just read the first lines again? I'll read, in order that you can get the continuity, I'll just read the first, just as a continuous poem. She was, my father said in an aside, a great beauty 40 years ago. Out of my crude childhood, I stared at our tottering hostess, trembling in her armchair, pouring tea from silver, her pink silk dress, her pale blue gaze. I could not see the girl my father saw. Now that I'm older than my father then was, I go with lifelong friends to the same parties, which we have gone to always. We do the same things always, although the parties sometimes change to funerals, that sometimes used to change to christenings. This is then Boston Airport. A face retains the image formed the moment when we first see it, and if it's seen once only, remains fixed in that moment. For example, here in the airport where I'm writing this, the man with the great stomach billowing under his flowered T-shirt, surmounted by his face spouting sweat, the dear old lady squeaking that she's sorry to be so helpless to the dark-suited stranger who's picked her bag up for her, the child snatched squalling by his mother from the jaws of a mouth spewing luggage onto a rotating band. All these will stay the same this moment when they're snapshot on my brain. These detached thoughts on a bus in an airport or on an aeroplane are like speeches by some ghost out of one's past, speaking from the boards of the theatre of one's subconscious. As I wrote above, I think the scenes on the airport were an intrusion, seeming to continue but rarely interrupting the thoughts on the bus. Better perhaps to strike them out and go back to the earlier sequence, which then, with the airport scenes admitted, would continue something like this, which I wrote in the motel bedroom that evening. Faces we've once loved fit into their seven ages of man as Russian dolls fit into one another. My X-ray memory penetrates through the seven covers of the successive dolls back to the face that I first saw. So when the exterior final doll is laid into its final box, your glowing face first seen shines through them all.